Greetings, my name's Bill Cummings, and welcome to In the Spotlight, a podcast where I get to know different artists, authors, and different interesting figures in the world today. today, I've got with me Dylan Murphy, who runs a new podcast called I Was There, a podcast on Ireland's music history. How you doing, Dylan?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me on, Bill.
No worries, man. How's your day going?
Yeah, pretty good. It's been chill, just doing a few bits post the podcast coming out. And yeah, it's nice and sunny in Ireland today for a change.
Yeah. Not too bad here in Cardiff. You know, not as hot as yesterday anyway.
Yeah.
It's funny. Every time I ask people how they are, it always gets back to the weather. So it's funny, really. Yeah.
It's the universal thing you can talk about, like.
True, man. True. So tell me a bit about the podcast that you've got. You're focusing on three artists so far. Is that right?
Yeah. So this was created by the 10th Man, and they sort of got in touch with me to host it and do the research for it. Essentially, it's three iconic gigs as part of a pilot series that otherwise, you know, these are three gigs that have been covered to varying degrees. Like the first one is Bob Marley in Daly Mount Park. So that was his last ever outdoor gig, and was very historic. There was over 20,000 people there. It was one of the first really big outdoor gigs in Ireland. And the others were the Cranberries' first ever gig with Dolores O'Riordan. So, you know, I didn't even realize for the longest time that there was a singer before her. But there was, and I met him as part of that episode, which was great.
Wow.
But a lot of these gigs kind of have varying reasons for why they are legendary. And while Bob Marley's was a huge outdoor gig at the peak of his powers, this Cranberries one was right in their infancy, and there was maybe only 30, 40, 50 people there, and they were teenagers, you know. So they had actually written some of their greatest songs for that very first gig, which is incredible. And then finally, the other one is Nirvana supporting Sonic Youth in Cork, which was right on the precipice of them blowing up and becoming the biggest band in the world. Potentially the last gig where no one really cared about who Nirvana were, you know?
Yeah. There was the legendary Reading appearance that they never actually did, isn't there, as well? But that's the other end anyway.
Yeah.
But that is a lot of one that people do talk about because they, you know, they never actually fulfilled it, which is sad. But so how do you approach a podcast? Do you talk to the members of the bands? Do you talk to people who are there, obviously?
Yeah.
Who's on the podcast, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess even the way that I sort of seen it is kind of, there's not a lot of documentation for a lot of the stuff. The Cranberries gig, the only thing that survives is a set list. There's a picture of that online. So the way you're really retelling these stories is through memories and through people's experiences. And part of that is collating what actually happened. So, you know, you're getting different stories from different people and trying to find out what the through line to a lot of this is, because over time people's memories fade or become a little fuzzy. So I was trying to get a broad range of people. So yes, I spoke to people in bands. So the likes of the Cranberries, I spoke to Fergal, the drummer, but I was also speaking to, you know, promoters, people that were in the crowd, even some of the venue, people that owned the venues, because for the likes of Nirvana, the venue Sir Henry's, it isn't there anymore. It was an iconic venue, and it's actually been knocked down. Likewise with Bob Marley's episode, the Bagatelle, a band, supported them, and they were kind of having a moment at the time. So I got to speak to the drummer actually from that band, and he was backstage with Bob Marley. But you end up following these weird, going down these weird rabbit holes and just coming on the most unlikely stories with different people. So a lot of the time you're finding people that, for one, you didn't even know exist, and two, have the most incredible stories that were maybe hidden in plain sight a little bit.
Yeah. I did this piece on the use of strings in the 90s. I could send it to you, actually. I mentioned the Cranberries because Linger is a real sort of, it's one of the best examples I pulled out, you know, around
Yeah.
the use of strings and how that became a thing in the 90s. And I talked to a lot of musicians who a lot of people don't know, but it's the stories. It sounds quite similar, really. A lot of people don't know them, but their whole story is like, wow, you know, you work with this person and this person. There was a celloist called Audrey Riley, who's worked with like Radiohead and Elbow and Muse and all these different bands. You know what I mean? It's this whole story about people who are often unseen in the music industry or who have had experiences that is often like something you're uncovering, isn't it? It's a fresh story in a way.
Yeah, there's something about kind of these people that are the glue behind a lot of stuff, or often kind of flip stories on their head. There was someone in the Nirvana episode where essentially there wasn't a lot of media coverage of that gig. There was no filming of it. There's, you know, photos and stuff taken, but I found someone in a Facebook group who claimed to have had footage from the day, and it turns out it was true. And this guy had snuck in a camera and, yeah, captured it all on this camera, and had actually been in touch with Rita Marley, who was looking to buy the footage off him to use as part of the museum and stuff. So those interesting things as well that haven't really been documented that would be at risk of being lost to history if these sort of things were created.
Become like an archivist, really.
Yeah,
Almost.
exactly.
Well, I suppose it is in a way, isn't it? It's like a mini sort of snapshot, really. And also the experiences people have of like maybe the first gig they went to, or you know, the first time they've seen these like these artists. Because like I don't know what it's like where you are, but we very rarely get these kind of mammoth artists coming here. So it's like a real sort of occasion that people they'll refer to for like, well, in this case, decades to come, won't they? So
Whereabouts are you based?
Cardiff and Wales.
Okay, Cardiff, yeah. So it's kind of the same, where I guess with this series, you had the Cranberries, who were, you know, a local band, obviously. So you have that side of it where you're able to capture that, but the Bob Marley one, to everyone I spoke to, kind of felt like a rare occasion that everybody got excited for. I guess Cork is kind of, you know, it's a big city in Ireland, but it's way further south than Dublin, and they'd get really good gigs or in and around that time. It had some great promoters doing stuff, but certainly wouldn't get as many cool things as the likes of London. And kind of what was interesting that I discovered is, like, obviously now everybody has kind of the same access to information through the internet, but because, you know, back then there was no internet, people had varying degrees of exposure to certain bands. So, like, a lot of the people were relying on Enemy or a magazine called Hot Press to sort of get information about this. So while loads of people at Reading at the following gig after the Nirvana and Sir Henry's knew about Nirvana, quite few people knew about them in Cork. So in different cities, different amount of people knew about them, which doesn't really happen anymore in the same way, which I find really interesting.
It's interesting, isn't it? It's a different world, really. It like having experienced like being that bit older and having experienced the music industry or the music like experienced music before the internet, it was interesting because you wouldn't like know certain bands. You'd like read about them in the Enemy or whatever, or Melody Maker, and you'd be like, they sound interesting, but I've never actually heard them unless you went into like a record shop. Like really looked for gold, you were lucky to hear them, or you heard them on like John Peel or something, you know, of Evening Session. You just wouldn't, you know. Whereas now it's like we've got so much access to everything, and like you could see who's playing down the road, and yeah, it's just a different world, isn't it? So with the Cranberries one, was that quite early on, would you say, for them?
So they were called the Cranberry Sawus. They had a different name. They had a different lead singer called Niall Quinn. And essentially they were still teenagers. He was in two bands at once, and the other band kind of started taking off a little bit, and he was the drummer in the other band. So he dipped from the Cranberry Sawus, and a friend introduced him to Dolores, and she ended up joining after doing a little audition and stuff. So that was very early on in their career.
She was quite young, wasn't she? I've done some research into
I
that
think
as
sort
well.
of 15, 16 sort of age, still all still at school.
And I think the song you're going to talk about was one of the first that she wrote, she wrote it lyrics for, I believe, anyway.
Yeah.
So you've also picked three tracks, and so have I, of the three artists. So what's your first one?
So the first one that you mentioned there is Linger by the Cranberries. Now I know that's a popular choice, but I guess the reason it's just stuck with me is through doing this. That song and Sunday was written shortly after the audition and was
Yeah.
performed at that first show they did, which is just crazy to think that two of their most popular songs ever, and that have been played all over the world, that have carried them all around the world, were performed to only 40 or 50 people and were written by teenagers at the time.
Yeah. It's just a really elegant and tender song, isn't it? It's beautiful, really. I've always loved her voice, and there's just a real sort of re like bit of sweetness about it, that kind of idea of that first kind of meeting somebody and that kind of feeling of, yeah, mixed feelings, I guess.
Yeah, it feels like a timeless song. Like it still sounds incredible today, and like you mentioned, the string sections and stuff on it really, yeah, give it that sort of cinematic like sort of feeling and stuff. And again, it was one I would have listened to a lot when I was younger, and then it kind of drifted away from my rotation. But then Royal Lotus did a cover of it that kind of exploded recently, and it kind of brought it back in a new way for
Okay.
me. And it's also cool, it introduced it to a lot of younger audiences on TikTok and stuff. So
Interesting.
just cool that it's still getting has that kind of power to just keep going and find itself in new places.
Yeah, like songs like that sort of stand the test of time, don't they? You know, a bit like the Beatles, sort of different songs the Beatles released. They've been covered like hundreds of times, like Yesterday
Yeah.
or yeah. There's like an emotional heart to it, I think. I think that's what really stands out about it as well, as well as the vocals and the melody and everything. Yeah. Beautiful song. I believe I chose Nirvana in Bloom.
Okay,
It's my
cool.
Nirvana
Yeah,
track.
big
Sorry,
tune.
jarring contrast there.
Yeah,
But yeah. I don't know. This one always stuck with me just because I love the juxtaposition of it. Like the way it balances the noise and the melody, the sort of bittersweetness to it. It's got that kind of almost sneering sort of vocal in the verse, and
yeah.
this kind of violence to the assault of the caustic guitars, thudding bass lines, and the drums that sort of like thunder in, if you know what I mean. But yet, it's still a pop song, if that makes sense. Like,
I think that whole album kind of it's heavy, but it's still pop music, a lot of it, which is really cool.
yeah. And it's got an almost Beatlesy chorus to it, hasn't it? Almost like, but it's got a sting in the tail because I love that line. He's the one that likes to shoot. He's the one that likes all our pretty songs, and he likes to shoot his gun. But he don't know what it means, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of self-aware, sardonic, but also refers to like the fact that Nirvana's audience was changing. They were becoming like, back then they call it jocks, you know. They were becoming a band that jocks liked, you know, like any just like anyone liked, you know, because they were like a pop
Yeah.
band there. But you felt like Kurt almost resented that as well. And that was a theme throughout his career, you know. He kind of resented the idea that they were this. Because he never really saw Nirvana as like a pop band as such, although he liked pop music, he kind of had this idea of them as like more of a punky band, you know. That's why the
Yeah.
In Utero is such a gear change in a way.
Yeah, I think Nevermind was one of the first CDs I had because my uncle basically, I was in his car one day and he just opened up
Yeah.
the wee box in the front and pulled out all these CDs, and it was like Block Party, 50 Cent, Eminem,
Nice.
acts like that, and Nirvana, Nevermind was one of the CDs. So like I just brought them all into my mom's car, and that CD I just absolutely rinsed when I was younger, back to back, because
Yeah.
I don't think I had an iPod or anything at that point, and A few of those CDs. I knew every word, every song back to back. I listened to like five or six albums religiously for a few years.
Yeah, when it came out, I mean, for a lot of people, especially my generation, it was a real sort of watershed moment, you know, like there was just something about that band, the great songs at the heart of it, but you felt like it, and this is something that is a lot more prevalent in music with social media, and like you mentioned TikTok and things like that. You felt like you identified with what you were singing about
Yeah.
as well as like how, you know,
And did
I don't
that
want
not
to
really become
swear,
a thing?
but
Did that
how
not really?
mega the tunes were as well, you know.
Yeah. Did that not really feel like a thing to you at the time with other acts? Was there no one really doing that? Or was it mostly
I
sort
think it was
of.
just because like it was prime age, like, you know, I
Okay.
was a teenager and it's just like this idea of, you know, somebody who's like obviously been through it feels like a bit of an outcast, feels quite angry and
Yeah.
feels quite like put to the side, do you know what I mean? Quite different. That did a, you know, strike a chord with a lot of people, I think, you know. And it was only when, funnily enough, when Oasis, you know, I don't know if Oasis are one of your other ones, but it was only when Oasis came in that I really sort of shifted more to sort of British music, you know. So, what's your second one?
So I'm sort of sticking with the theme of the acts that were in the series, and the second one is
Bob
Redemption
Marley.
Song by Bob Marley. There's a number of reasons for it, but it just sort of sticks out to me as one on its own in his catalogue. You know, it's the last song in his last album. Doesn't really follow anything to do with reggae. At that gig at Daly Mount Park, when he played that song, he dedicated it to the Civil War in the north of Ireland at the time, which is kind of a huge, huge moment. And a lot of people were surprised at how tapped in and how much he was paying attention. And it just seemed like a beautiful kind of pausing moment in between all the rest of the music that was quite upbeat and joyful, and he kind of took this moment to sort of nod to what was going on and show his support. It's also just a really beautiful introspective and sort of personal take on what was going on in the world.
Yeah, very haunting as well. And he always had like a real wisdom to him, didn't he? And a sort of, like you said, social connection to a lot of issues. Yeah, around the world and back home as well. So yeah, great choice. Yeah, it's definitely one of my favorites as well, for sure. I picked something a bit more up the tempo, I think. Yeah, Three Little Birds. I think it's just because I just love how uplifting it is, I guess, in contrast to Redemption Song. I just love the way it skips along and the melodies, sort of golden melodies, and yeah, it's just like, yeah, even just like the first sort of lines of it, you know, it's just like, don't worry about a thing, you know, because everything is going to be all right, you know. It's like, yeah, that's what I like about, as well as the social commentary. That's what I like about Bob Marley as well. It's just his melodies and his kind of like uplifting songs he's got as well. So that's
Yeah,
kind of.
that's definitely like a classic that so many people, so many different ages can still know and relate to, and really, really catchy, like
Proper summer tune, isn't it, as well?
yeah.
Yeah. It's very skippy sort of tune. What was your last one?
So the last one is Drain You by Nirvana. It was the first song during that set at the gig in Sir Henry's in Cork, and you can actually hear a lot of that set. Someone's uploaded the sound desk recording to YouTube. I don't think it has the very first song, but I believe this was the first song in the set. And again, it's one of them that in that CD that my uncle had given me, I just used to keep hitting back to the start of this song because I loved it so much. And I think for me it was kind of just like a mind-blowing moment hearing it for the first time. A lot of that album it was kind of mind-blowing hearing it for the first time, but it's just interesting to me how much of what you listen to at an early age really informs your taste even when you're older. And like, I can just find myself gravitating towards music that has shades of that in it even now. It's a lot of like punk rap acts that I would listen to that kind of, yeah, I've taken inspiration from Nirvana and this song in particular.
Definitely, yeah. That whole album is just, yeah. It's funny because later on, they didn't really like the production on it, but then the kind of the production on it is kind of part of the appeal of it, isn't it, in a way, as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think they wanted something like dirtier, a bit more like In Utero or like Bleach, but actually, I think the production is partly what makes it such a big album, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds a little more polished than the
It
others and has a
does.
bit more broader appeal.
Definitely. I chose Ode to My Family by the Cranberries. I've been really listening to this one actually. It's quite ironic that you got in touch about a podcast about these featuring these three artists. So I've been really listening to this album. No Need to Argue. It's probably their biggest album, wasn't it? But this song, it just really struck me, and I was listening to a podcast where someone was talking about it as well with a sort of deeper reference, which I wouldn't have got myself, because it's sort of a yearning for like a simple life as a child, isn't it? It's like a tribute to her family, Dolores's family, and I just love her. I love the vocal, and it's so tender, and just like you can really hear her accent as well, which is another thing I really love about the Cranberries. She's just like. Really, this was before like Irish bands, like Fontaines DC, etc., were coming out, with like a real strong accent, just decades before. And it was quite rare to hear, actually, at the time.
Yeah, I
So
think
were they
there's
from
something about,
Limerick? Is that right?
yeah, from
Yeah.
Limerick, and that's a pretty strong and unique accent, and there's something about kind of,
Yeah.
I don't know, pop culture always sort of spewing out American bands who have quite nondescript accents that everybody seems to gravitate towards. But that's something I love about the Cranberries as well, is that you can hear Dolores' accent. And Limerick's a real hotbed for talent. There's so much musical talent coming out of there, people really leaning into their accent and what makes
Yeah.
them unique. And I mean, I don't know, Irish accents sound great, I think, in a lot of stuff. You're mentioning Fontaines there. It's unique, and it's what makes people stand out amongst the crowd at the moment.
I think it was a thing in the 90s as well where you had more, obviously Oasis with the Manchester accent. I was speaking of Wales, sort of Catatonia and Super Furry Animals, those kind of bands where you could really hear the accent. Before that, a lot of bands had sort of sung in sort of more American or just like a you wouldn't know where they were from, sort of accent. Also I didn't realize but this, but there's kind of a regret to that song as well, because when she sings about Does Anyone Care, she I mean I don't know if you go into this in the podcast because it's a bit of a difficult subject, but apparently she'd written about suffering abuse at a family friend's hands. And apparently there is, and I'd never really put two and two together, but I heard on this other podcast talking about the song that there is possibly some reference to that, almost like a, does anyone care? Does anyone know? Almost, and that gives the song almost a kind of a heightened trauma, that's kind of really like, whoa, I didn't even realize that, I loved the song. And then I finding out that reference, I was like, whoa, okay. There's something darker there,
Yeah, definitely. And there's actually an amazing Tiny Desk performance of that song, if you've ever watched that
No,
NPR Tiny
I will
Desk.
do.
Yeah, it's from years ago, but it's really beautiful. But yeah, I think like a lot of layered songwriting, and it's a lot of that kind of music where it can give you a certain feeling, but the lyrics might be saying something totally different. And with the more you dig into it,
Yeah.
yeah, just how layered it is.
Yeah, like almost like little Easter eggs, isn't it, in a way that you wouldn't actually know in a lot of ways, because in a pop song you can't always address these issues like deeply, but just dropping that little line in there is like, does anybody care? It's like, what's that reference to? And it's like then years later you find out it's a reference to something. So obviously Zombie was the big one on that album as well, obviously, but just wanted to pick something slightly different. I love Zombie as well. It's a great song. But yeah, I think the Cranberries are almost like underrated, weirdly, even though they were huge at the time. It's good to hear that they're sort of having a bit of a renaissance with younger listeners, because I think they've got some great tunes, you know.
Yeah,
Which,
absolutely.
and obviously, sadly, no longer with us as well. So, Dolores. So yeah, it's good that she's remembered. So what else have you got planned for the podcast?
So at the moment we're kind of ro we've just rolled out the final episode this week, which was the Cranberries episode, and just getting it out there a little more, talking to people about it and sort of digging into some of the stories. Like we had a launch event in Dublin a couple of weeks ago where we had the original singer of the Cranberries, Niall, was on a panel with another person called Jackie McCarthy, who features heavily in the Bob Marley episode. So I did a panel discussion with them. But yeah, it's just kind of talking about it more, talking to more people about it and sort of digging into the stories. I was kind of conscious coming on, like, oh, will I spoil bits that are on it? But I think it's worth talking about to get people excited. I've made a video there that'll go out either today or tomorrow, just talking about Nirvana's connection to Ireland, and that's addressed in their episode, where the more I dug into what was going on, the more influence Ireland seemed to have on them as a group, where Kurt Cobain traced his lineage, his family roots to Ireland, and thought it was Cork, and he did that whole interview where he said he never felt more spiritual in his life than when he had been in Cork. Then it turned out that it actually went back to Carrickmore in County Tyrone. So he felt this deep connection to Ireland. And yeah, after that, when they returned and played in Belfast in 1993, he was performing in the King's Hall, and Courtney Love bought a jumper off someone in the crowd and gave it to him. And it was this iconic red and black striped jumper he always wore. So we got that in Belfast. And then the other thing that we found out was Dave Grohl, after Kurt had sadly passed, was doing a bit of soul searching in Ireland, and he went to the Ring of Kerry, and he was on Graham Norton talking about it, and he said he went to the tried to go to the remote place he could to get away from basically just thinking about music. He said he couldn't really bring himself to make music or listen to music, and he was driving along a road and bumped into a hitchhiker who was wearing a Kurt Cobain t-shirt, and he kind of just went, I can't get away from this, I've got to just keep going. And then that's why he started Foo Fighters. So there's all this sort of lore to the band that sort of traces back to Ireland, which is kind of crazy. So even beyond the specific gigs, I kind of love sharing the rest of the story that's there as well.
Like you said before, it can open up a whole sort of history, can't it? And a whole sort of untold story. I suppose it's quite common in America, a lot of Irish immigration over there, so there's a lot of lineage there. I found out myself like last year or a couple of years ago, I've actually got like quite a, I mean, not with a name like Cummings, you could guess, I've got quite a good DNA sort of history into Sligo.
Oh,
So
class.
yeah, which I kind of knew about because my dad sort of told me about it years and years and years ago. So and obviously with the name, I kind of knew that anyway, but it's interesting to look it up. And you with DNA tests these days, you can find out a lot more information as well, can't you? So
Yeah, it's crazy.
it is interesting. I definitely like to make the trip over one day. What was the music scene like? You talked about some of the bands and stuff. There's a few Irish bands I'm really loving at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
One called the Cliffords. Have you heard of these band? They're
Yeah.
coming out. I really
Yep.
love her voice. That's fantastic. Is there anybody you are loving at the moment in terms of from Ireland?
Yeah, I guess I got into music journalism through covering like rap music in Ireland, and then sort of branching off into doing more stuff. So I'd be really into that.
Kneecap.
Yeah, Kneecap are really blowing up at the moment. There's
Definitely.
a ton of acts. There's people like Kojak I was interviewing last week. Who else? You mentioned Fontaines. There's a lot of smaller acts that are doing really subversive and cool things. There's a group called Chamomile who are from Dublin that are kind of like a label that have sort of pop, R&B, indie music. Jordan Adetunji from Belfast, he got nominated for a Grammy last year. He's
Nice.
he's making kind of like R&B and stuff. So
Nice.
the kind of music that's coming out of Ireland is really changing quite drastically, and there's a lot of people who are pioneering in sounds that haven't really traditionally been popular here, which is really exciting. Seems to be a bit of a kind of renaissance in terms of the kind of music and stuff that's coming out. But those would be some of the ones I'm really into. Courtesy is another rapper who's definitely worth checking out. Yeah, I could actually go on for hours, but I'm
No, yeah,
super,
any
super
genre.
excited to.
I've got no, any genre. It's fine.
Yeah.
I'm cool. I'm like whatever. I like anything. Obviously, in the 90s, I probably was more just guitars mainly
Yeah.
when I was a teenager. But these days, it's just anything really that sort of excites and stuff. Although I did actually like. It's funny because I've been revisiting the 90s quite a bit. I did actually quite like some hip hop stuff as well back then, but it tended to be
Yeah.
like your more obvious sort of Tupacs, even Coolio, Gangsta's Paradise, stuff like that,
He lived in
obvious,
Ireland
a bit
for a
more
long time,
obvious Dr.
actually.
Dre, people like that,
Yeah.
like more the big ones, because obviously when you're younger, it's like, it's just what you see, but got a bit more, there's a good hip hop scene here actually as well, really coming out. So there's a guy called Sage Todd who raps in, definitely check him out. He raps
Okay.
in Welsh and English. So
Nice.
he's got that kind of bilingual, that bilingual appeal, which is very cool.
That's
And
cool, yeah.
obviously with a culture that may not necessarily be, his family might not necessarily be from Wales. So it's got
Yeah.
like a whole melting pot in there. So yeah, there's definitely. It's interesting though with Ireland in terms of there seem to be so many bands coming out of there. Do you think it's because I don't know, what reason you would think, but do you think it's because you're slightly away from like the British or the English, you know what I mean, scene or whatever? They can just like develop their own thing in a way and then come out with that rather than, if you're from London or Manchester, there's a kind of a, you know what I mean? There's a kind of a
Yeah, no,
expected sound, kind of.
yeah, I totally get you. I was speaking to someone recently who said maybe not in terms of sound, but in terms of like quality, like because they're working in isolation in Ireland, there's not really the same industry that exists. You're not going to have the same access to studios and producers and stuff that you have in, say, London. So you kind of do the DIY thing in your bedroom and you're able to really own your craft. And by the time that you are starting to go abroad or go to London to work with people, you're at a like a really good level because you've kind of incubated and stuff. So a lot of people I spoke to have sort of cited that as a reason for the quality in what's coming out of Ireland. I also think that there's something about a lot of acts don't want to be the same as what's going on in, say, the UK or America, but also having them either side of us means that we're still sort of like the influence is still convenient for us to pick up what we do and we don't want. I think there's the internet's just a huge thing as well, where a lot of acts are not being influenced by anything in close physical proximity to them. They're just picking up whatever they're finding. I've been seeing kids on TikTok making this sort of underground rap sound that's kind of coming from weird places in America and parts of London that really has nothing to do with Ireland at all. But when they stick their accent over it, it does sound pretty unique. Or when they're talking about stuff in Ireland, it does feel quite unique. So I think there's kind of a melting pot of that kind of stuff. And then just, immigration has played a big part in just the diversity of sounds coming out. And then you've also just got like, I guess the end of the Civil War in Northern Ireland especially means that more people are coming here and changing of attitudes and stuff like that has played a big role as well.
Opened it up a bit more and stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool, man. Thanks for joining me. So where can people find the podcast? I presume on all the streaming platforms and podcast platforms.
Yeah, so all streaming platforms, if you search, I was there. It's by the 10th man, so if you search either of those, you should be able to find it. And yeah, the episodes are on Bob Marley, the Cranberries, and Nirvana.
And have you got more planned? I mean, you probably can't tell me who they're on, but have you got more planned, or is this just like a one-off
So
series?
this is the pilot series. We're kind of just focused at the moment on getting it all the episodes out and getting it on as many years as possible. But yeah, I think we'd love to do more if it's a possibility. But for now, we're just trying to focus on really getting these stories out there.
Cool. Thanks for coming on, Dylan. Been
Thank you
good
so much for
chat.
having me.
Good chat, mate, and good luck with the podcast. Sounds fascinating. I'll definitely have a listen to that. You've been listening to In the Spotlight with myself, Bill Cummings, and I've been joined by Dylan Murphy, who is presenter of a podcast called I Was There, a new podcast on Ireland's music history. Until the next time, ta-da.
See you later.